Very much for the introduction. So today I will talk about some ongoing work with Takato Mori from Kyoto University. So this is about some causality issue on some setup of the holography. And I am a quantum info theorist. And so if you hear something interesting from this talk, it's mostly due to a careful calculation by Takato. And if you hear something strange, it's most likely due to my misunderstanding of what he told me. But anyway, I will try my best. Okay, so as you know, the idea of holography has given an important hint to understand various problems in quantum gravity. But we really want to understand our own universe. And one possible way to go is to consider holography with finite radial cutoff, by which I mean that we consider ADS space, asymptotic boundary, and its perfectly well-defined quantum system. Now we are going to introduce finite radial cutoff, like this red surface. And then we ask, can we construct a quantum theory, some version of quantum theory on this surface or not? And the nice thing about this idea is we can potentially probe the physics of something beyond the normal ADS space, like digital space, and so on. And there are many different proposals of doing this. But the scope of this talk is very modest. I will focus on a particular setup based on the so-called end of the world brain. So let me explain the setup a little bit. So it is motivated from the so-called ADS-BCFD correspondence. And again, I'm not going into technical detail of the setup, I mean the correspondence. But the basic idea is instead of the CFD on the full circle, so I will actually focus entirely on 2 plus 1D ADS, or 1 plus 1D CFD. But you consider conformal field theory, but with boundaries, like these red dots. And then there's a particular way of putting nice boundary conditions. But this is just quantum mechanical system on this segment. But then the proposal is that this theory is gravitationally dual, probably to the ADS space with the end of the world brain. And by end of the world brain, it literally means that it is the end of the world, means like the space ends there. And then, but it's just a sheet with the finite tension. That's it. Okay, and then by changing the tension, you can change the location of this brain. And so for no tension limit, it becomes geodesic. And the infinite tension limit, it matches with the asymptotic boundary. So this is the setup. And then in two sides, many physical quantities have been computed. And so slowly, people have been building like evidences for this duality. Okay, that's the situation.
This is a time-like brain.
Sorry?
The end of the world brain is a time-like brain.
Time-like, yes. So it's just, So then I picked this particular geometry because this particular geometry with antipodal points, it's a static geometry. So that is the reason. Okay. But what we want to do is not ADS-BCFD. We want to consider the so-called third generalized holography picture, by which I mean that we are thinking that we are asking the following question. Can we consider this bulk gravity, like holographic realization on this brain Q and also A, right? So we can just imagine that we ask this question that we can place qubits on Q and A and then construct some nice well-defined quantum theory to explain this physics on the bulk or not. That is essentially the question. And of course, we don't have any well-defined recipe from the gravity to this holography picture. And we are not really like presenting any recipe to go from the gravity to this quantum mechanics. Rather, we will ask if such a setup even makes sense from causality reasons and so on. So there are three pictures, like BCFD with boundary, the bulk gravity, but there is another picture. And but these kind of three different pictures can be understood, at least for me, very well by using tensor network picture. As some of you may know, key entanglement properties of the ADS-CFD can be simulated by the so-called random tensor network. The idea is very simple. At each dot, each node, you just pick high random tensors. And then with some miracle, it turns out that the resulting wave function on the boundary obeys the Ryu-Takanagi formula. And also you can modify this version so that it obeys the so-called entanglement wedge reconstruction, which is essentially about the boundary operator correspondence. But here we are interested in the geometry with the end of the world brain. And then, so how do we characterize and create such a tensor network? And the idea is very simple. You just place a product state or short-range entangled state on the end of the world brain, and then it turns out that the Ryu-Takanagi formula for BCFT follows very naturally by doing this. Okay, but so this is a BCFT picture. This is like a gravity picture. This is the BCFT picture. But what we want to do is generalize holography. So instead, we are imagining that instead of projecting the states on the brain into like product state, we leave these quantum states open and not specified.
Sorry, can I ask? You said you called it a product state,
mm-hmm.
but it looked like it was just that the. So you mean it's uncorrelated to what's inside the rest of the network?
Here, it's so first. The recipe would be, I prepare this network. I just cut the tensor along this line, and then I project everything, like all the legs cut into, let's say, zero state or any product state. Then the RT formula follows. That is a statement. And then, of course, I cannot rigorously show that this is the only way, but it seems to me that by using random tensors here, 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 I am forced to use product states on the brain. Otherwise, I can't reproduce the RT formula. That is
one more quick question.
Mm-hmm.
You previously said that the brain may have different tension, I guess, depending on the boundary condition.
Right.
In the CFT. So is there anything in your tensor network model that corresponds to changing the tension?
Yeah, that is, I do not know. In a sense that, we can prepare that the BCFT state by applying projector on the other side. And that projector, the choice of the projector would depend on the tension, but I am not aware of any work which precisely relate tension and the boundary conditions at this moment. Maybe it's my ignorance of the literature, but.
I'm not sure that was the question. How did you choose where to cut?
Where to cut? It's just we solve the Einstein equation to find the locations of the brain. Is that the question?
Yeah, for a particular tension.
A particular tension, and then T is fixed everywhere. Yeah.
So is your tensor network story independent of what tension you pick?
Yes, in a sense that I can pick any location. Yes, right. So this one is particularly like in the middle.
So I have a naive question. Is this a story of random tensors? Can you explain a little bit better the role? Like, is there a tensor sitting at every point, and then how is that related to geometry?
Oh, it's just basically normal story of the ADS-CFT correspondence in a sense that we pick a slice and then we just discretize it and the entire tensor network and. Then we know that RT formula follows. So that is the, yeah.
So the tensor is a metric? Is that like if I want to count?
Yeah, it's just a discretization of the space, yes.
Okay. And in what sense is it random?
Random is like when you prepare a tensor, is like an object with like, I mean, it's not, tensor is like, this thing, right, with numbers. But I can always view this as a quantum state, right, by doing this. So then by random tensor, we mean that we pick this object randomly according to the Hall measure, uniformly at random.
So the topology of the tensor network, though, is that it also looks like it's irregular in your picture.
Oh, this one, this particular one?
Yeah.
Oh, this particular one, I just put it from some papers.
But I mean, I think what Niyayesh is getting at is we need, why is this geometry like an anti-de Sitter one?
Mm-hmm.
Presumably you're assuming that each link has sort of the same length.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to say something about the topology of the network to get a certain geometry
mm-hmm.
that's implied. But so are you assuming you're randomizing just the tensors at the nodes, but you're not randomizing anything in the topology?
No. So always in this, the rule of the game, what tensor network can do is we first need to specify the Cauchy slice, and then we just pile the space with random tensors. Then we can create a wave function which obeys the Ryotakani formula and some other properties that is consistent with what ADS CFD correspondence is. That's all we know. Yeah. Somehow it works, and so it's. But I would say that this is just a toy. So we can. This is just a guidance, and yeah. If we want to really study the real ADS CFD, we should look at real ADS CFD. But still, I think this kind of a picture is helpful in understanding what should be. Yeah, and so. But anyway, what we ask is like quantum system on Q and A by imagining like Q is actually physical degrees of freedom, and they ask if we can define a quantum theory on Q and A, right? And then, or does it even make sense to talk about quantum theory on Q and A? And I think this is a very important step, and to ask such a questions because, yes, so this is like one baby step to go beyond asymptotic ADS boundary. Okay, so, but it's actually like there are already like known obstacles for defining such theory. So this particular version we found, but there is a very similar puzzles already known in the literature for other studies of the holography with finite radial cutoff. But it turns out that in these situations, subadditivity of entanglement seems violated. And subadditivity of entanglement is the statement that if you compute the mutual information, then that should be zero or positive. So I should put equal mark as well there. But anyway, so that is a statement. So if you are looking at quantum theory or any wave function, pure or density matrix, this should be true. But in this situation, it seems violated, by which I mean the following. We pick equal time slice on equal time slice and then compute the entropy for R0 and R1. Then for equal time slice, R0 and R1, it turns out that mutual information is positive, so that's good. But if you time evolve R0 and R1 to the future and then doing the 45 degree angle, then R0 prime and R1 prime, then if you compute the mutual information by believing the Ryu-Takanagi formula or HRT formula more precisely, then it turns out that you can see that the mutual information becomes negative. So this seems to suggest that this system has some strange properties at least. So it seems like subadditivity is violated. So of course it could be the case that this RT formula-like prescription does not hold in this setup, but there is one puzzle. So something is strange. And the second point is that in ADS space, there is a nice theorem known as Gao-Waldau theorem. And I put violation quote unquote because theorem cannot be violated. But what I mean is that by placing the radial cutoff, you can have a situation where this theorem statement does not hold anymore. And so this theorem essentially says that there is no shortcut through the bulk in a negatively curved spacetime. And so on the left-hand side, you see that it's always faster to go around the boundary, not going through the bulk. And then this is very important to make sense of the causality of the ADS-CFD correspondence, because what if, suppose that this was not true, in a sense that there is a faster path in the bulk, then that would mean that holographically, the holographic shift on the boundary should admit faster than light signaling, right? But that's very strange. So this should be true in order to construct a quantum theory with local, very well-defined local interactions and the causality and so on. But if we look at this geometry, Q and A, then if you compute the time it takes from this point Q to A, then you can see that because it's essentially because this is already near the bulk center, so it's faster. So this means that if I want to construct theory, quantum theory on Q and A, then I'm forced to believe that this Q and A theory admits faster than light signaling. And do we want to believe such a faster than light signaling exists? Well, I do not want, but this seems to be the implications. So there is another puzzle. So these are two known puzzles already pointed out in the literature or versions. Okay.
Sorry, I didn't quite get. So what would bother you is if you could go faster than light within the boundary CFT, right?
Yes. So
I don't see why you're doing that, given that Q is extended through the bulk. Shouldn't I just be focusing on a path that goes from the boundary of the CFT?
That might be one scenario. I do not know what is the correct scenario, honestly, but it's just maybe in this theory we can define on Q and A somehow forbid us from sending a signal in this direction. If I can send a signal in this direction, then that holographic realization, if I'm observer here and observer here, then this guy will get the signal from here faster than the light speed. So that is.
Now, I think my question in comes.
Question.
There's a question. Sorry.
Can I ask a question? Isn't this just Penrose's network theorem from 1960s?
So I couldn't hear.
What did you say?
Isn't this Roger Penrose's theorem about the behavior of spin networks from the 1960s?
So I'm not knowledgeable enough.
Isn't it just Roger Penrose's theorem on how random spin networks behave when they're large that he proved in the 1960s?
I don't think it's related to that, Lee.
Really? Okay.
But yeah, I think the combination of my ignorance and also the the online thing, it's probably a bit difficult for me to answer that question. So I'm happy to chat with you. Yeah, in other.
Yes, you have access to the chat.
Yes, right.
Lee, what if you're not being understood, you want to put on the chat the question, and he has to read it out.
That meanwhile, yeah.
Yes, yeah, so I repeat. So. If I understand right, the issue of faster than light is you don't want holography to imply that you can have influences faster than light in the CFT.
In the CFT, or yes,
but
right.
The CFT, it's a BCFT, so it lives on A plus the boundary conditions.
BCFT,
it doesn't live
yes.
On Q. So why are you worried about something being slower from Q around to A?
Right. So BCFT itself, it's causal and it has no problem at all. Here we are asking is like BCFT is a picture with A and just boundary
exactly.
Conditions.
Yeah.
But here we are asking the question if that is a, can we construct the equivalent dual theory on Q and A? And then the reason why I'm asking this is like it's part of the our effort to put the boundary or the radial cutoff here instead of here, and then we are asking if it even makes sense to talk about quantum theory purely defined on Q and A. That is the
question. Seems to be like a mistaken concept. Mm-hmm. Q is already dual to something in the BCFT. So
yes.
Between the two pictures.
Then these pictures are usually called a double holography and. Because there are two holography pictures,
right?
Yeah.
So do you have a resolution to it?
That's I don't know. let's say so. Let me move on. So that is the issue. So there are issues, and even are we allowed to talk about quantum theory on Q&A or not? Maybe yes, maybe not. Maybe yes, but with some non-locality. That is, the possibilities. But here I would like to sharpen. So our main contribution in this work is just to make a little bit more sharper analysis on this causality issue in this end of the world brain setup, generalized holography setup, by using the idea so-called holographic quantum task or holographic scattering. So let me explain this new tool. So this idea originates from a very important paper by Alex May in 2019. So now I'm going back to the purely ADS CFT picture. There's no brain and so on. So on the left-hand side, I have ADS space, and then I arrange the input. So I'm preparing two particles sitting at C1 and C2. Then they travel to the center of the bulk, and they scatter and they interact, and then will be revealed at some other boundary location, which are specified by R1 and R2. And then this is a perfectly normal thing to do. You can go there and then interact and then go back to the boundary. At least it seems possible. But let's try to understand this physics from the boundary perspective. Then here I'm normalizing the time and so on so that it's a light rays travels at a 45 degree angle. So this is the boundary representations. And then C1, C2, R1, R2 are arranged in this way. So it's kind of twisted. But what is important here is that you can try to scatter C1, C2 by bringing them together at this red dot at the center. But then you don't have enough time to bring these particles to R2. Okay. And then you can actually show that no matter what you do on this geometry, there is not enough time for the direct boundary scattering in this setup. And this is very, very puzzling because from the bulk picture, I should be allowed to interact in an arbitrary manner. But from the boundary picture, it seems like this is not possible, right? Because I can't bring C1, C2 together. Okay. So this is a kind of the puzzle. And then this is, I think, a very serious puzzle because it naively, if I take these lessons, then it seems to be implying that any interaction is prohibited on ADS CFT, but that shouldn't be the case. And so here is a simplified picture. This is the causal graphs. So on the bulk, this is a scattering, but on the boundary, C1 and C2 can send a signal to R1 and R2, but they are not allowed to directly interact. Okay. Then on the bulk, I can implement any unitary U12, but on the boundary, how can I implement U12 in this setup? That is the problem. And one possible idea to resolve this puzzle was proposed by Alex, which is maybe entanglement in CFT was used as a resource. So the idea is the following. First step is to construct these W1, W2 wedges, these diamond-like regions. So W1 is defined as a region which is future of C1, but is past of R1 and R2. So this W1 region is like, intuitively speaking, input particle C1 has an access, but still it has enough time to scatter off to R1 and R2. Now, similarly, you can construct W2, which. So these are just the wedges we can construct from the information about C1, C2, R1, and R2. But nice thing about this is that if you compute the entanglement entropy for this W1 wedge and W2 wedge, then it's actually order 1 over G Newton, in a sense that if you compute the RT formula, the RT surface is going through the bulk, so these two wedges are connected. This means that C1 and C2, this input particles, in principle, has an access to this shared entanglement. Okay. And the nice thing about, beautiful thing about this result is that this arrangement is just enough time separation to make this wedges connected. And then now, what is good about entanglement? Well, actually, with entanglement, at least in principle, in theory, in quantum information theory, it is known that arbitrary interaction can be induced by borrowing some entanglement. And just to give you an idea, the one possible idea is to use quantum teleportation. So this, if this is EPR pairs, then you can just teleport this C1 to C2, right? Then you can mix them together and then redistribute. Now, of course, in this protocol, it depends on the bare basis measurement outcome. So unfortunately, you cannot do arbitrary unitaries, but there's a refined protocols, and you can do arbitrary unitaries. So the idea is that even though in this geometry, the interaction seems not possible, somehow by using entanglement, we should be able to implement any interactions. So upshot of this tool is that this scattering event or interaction event is possible because of the pre-shared entanglement in the geometry. And this is a very nice tool because it tells us a lot about entanglement and the causality and, on the, this ADS space just by considering these causal particles and so on. So then what we want to do is to use this idea in this setup with end of the world brain and then see what it says. Because if this end of the world brain and ADS boundary system is a well-defined quantum system, then it should be able to simulate the scattering event on the bulk. So is it possible or not? That is the question. Okay, so let's ask the question. So I'm going to arrange my particle in the following way. So it's basically the same type of a scattering event, but I'm going to place C1 on the end of the world brain, and the other locations are the same. So they are, again, colliding at the center. Then from the bulk viewpoint, this scattering is possible. So if generalized holography is possible, then we should be able to holographically simulate and see this physics in quantum systems. So let's try to see if wedges are connected in this setup or not. Then just to remind you that in the original setup, in the ADS, pure ADS, this is the case, so there is a connected wedge. And then again, we can try to compute these two wedges, W1 and W2, by looking at the future of C1 and the past of R1 and R2. So W2 just remains the same. So that's W1 is the only place we see the change. Then suppose that we look at the future light cone and the past light cones, and then we look at the intersections. And then unfortunately, what we find is that these W1 and W2 wedges are not connected in this setup. Okay. So this means that in this theory, by considering future light cone, past light cones, it's not enough to construct a theory. Okay. And then I want to mention that this potential non-local coupling between brain and asymptotic boundary, it does not really change the shape of W1 and W2. At least in a naive strategy, is not enough to change this thing. Okay, so entanglement is not there, so we are strictly prohibited to simulate a scattering event. Okay, here we have a possibility of some, so maybe we are forced to believe that there is a superluminal signaling in this setup. And then to proceed, actually it's actually nice to remind ourselves about like some how the entanglement wedge grow in this system. So here is the starting particle, then particle starts and then going to the center of the bulk. And then at each time step, I can try to construct the boundary region so that this particle is contained in the entanglement wedge of the boundary. And then because that region is naturally containing all the information about the traveling particle. So if we just naively take a snapshot and then look at the growth of the entanglement wedge, then in the cartoon picture, it looks like this, and then it's essentially the superluminal. So indeed, if you want to talk about the radial direction movement in this setup, it seems that we are forced to talk about superluminal growth of the entanglement wedge. And by the way, there is already a relevant observation already you can find in the famous T-T-bar deformation paper by Fairind and collaborators. Okay, so then, but this in order to find this entanglement wedge growth, superluminal growth, what we should actually look at is to look at the induced light cone. So the point is that we started this journey of asking this question of finding the quantum state, quantum theory, by starting from very well-defined ADS CFT correspondence. So we should always go back to that. And you see that this C1 particle, originally it started from the other boundary. In some sense, it's behind the end of the wild brain. So suppose that we imagine that we start the signal from C1 tilde, that's behind the brain, and then time evolving, and then we can talk about what is the causal influence of that kind of particles. And then it turns out that this induced light cone from the behind of the brain, it completely matches with this growth of the entanglement wedge. So this is a nice thing. And then it turns out that what we find is that in this, by considering not the light cone, but the induced light cones from behind the brain, it's actually you recover the connected entanglement wedges. And then for that, I want to be more precise that we have explicitly checked for various configurations, but we believe that more like a general theorem can be proven. It's called the connected wedge theorem, and which was originally proven in the original holographic task context. But probably by using the focusing theorem, focusing conjecture type argument, we believe that, connectedness of the wedges can be proven if we construct the wedges by using induced light cones. So this problem of the absence of entanglement can be resolved by thinking about induced light cones. And also subadditivity is actually safe as well. The reason is that we have considered R0 prime and R1 prime, that is 45 degree angles, but these are actually, we shouldn't think about that because it's actually causally not related to R0 and R1 because in this setup, superluminal signaling, something like superluminal signaling is happening. So then only like evolution you can have is only up to this wedge, like this shape, and then R0 prime prime and R1 prime prime. Then you can actually see that in this surface, the subadditivity is safe. And the nice thing about this is that it's actually this little bit of non-locality is just enough to save subadditivity. In a sense that if you push R0 prime prime, R1 prime prime a little bit further, then you immediately have the subadditivity violation. And so that is one observation we had, but we are currently believing that these results can be more strengthened. Especially by considering induced light cones, we believe that subadditivity is always satisfied, and it's probably due to some result, general result by Maroff and his collaborators. But anyway, that is our hope. Okay, so hopefully that this idea of introducing like induced light cone successfully resolves the puzzles we faced, like violation of the subadditivity and also the absence of the entanglement and so on. Okay. But of course, the question is then, do I need to believe that there is a non-local theory on the boundary? And I do not want to think so. So I want to find a resolution that says like maybe it's apparent. Because by like using a space shuttle and then going there, and I could see the superluminal signaling. That sounds very strange to me. Okay, so let's briefly recap what this original work by Omiya and Wei on this double holography setup says. So what they found is that the signaling on the brain, within the brain, is always local. There is no shortcut. And signaling on the asymptotic ADS boundary is local, but only this coupling, like sending a signal through the bulk between Q and A, can be non-local, in a sense like a causal. So that is what they pointed out. But what we found here is that, well, the growth of the light cones and the violation of subadditivity and its recovery and so on seems to suggest that there is a non-local growth on the brain, and everything else is local. So it seems like what we are finding is really in tension with what Omiya and Wei found so far. But now, going back to the original ADS CFT picture, again, ADS CFT, the CFT side is very well defined. It's relativistic and it's nice. And then in this picture, the Hamiltonian HAB is perfectly local and it's causal. So then, in understanding ADS-CFT correspondence, we could view this B degree of freedom is like isometry from Q, brain degree of freedom, to the boundary. Then with this picture, it's at least it's a bit difficult for me to think that by going from B to Q, some non-local interaction emerges between Q and A, or some non-local signaling emerges on Q. It's a bit harder to believe. So we really want to understand these phenomena, strange phenomena, within the local Hamiltonian frameworks, and so on. And then the question is, can we resolve this puzzle or not? And then, unfortunately, I and Takato haven't converged to a consensus on this. But so I will give you two perspectives, two scenarios. So first scenario is about some complexity-like scenario. That is, this non-local light cone is just apparent in a sense that in order to create local excitation on this region, it's actually you already need a highly complex excitations. So even though the energy and excitations look like propagating like this figure, but the required operation is actually just very causal light cone-like situations. And then this, if this is the case, then it's just we are saying that creating a local radial-like excitation requires high complexity, and then there's no way of sending a signal at the speed of light, or faster than the speed of light. So that might be one possibility. And well, another possibility, or maybe related, is that, as I mentioned briefly, this map from Q and B is an isometry, meaning that if I invert it, then the map from B to Q is like a projection. So this means like there is some information lost about when mapping from B and Q. And then this is actually very natural, because if I think about some particle which comes from A and then go to Q regions and then go through and then do something on these red regions, and then the point is that this end of the wild brain wouldn't know what's happening behind it. So there seems to be some degrees of freedom Q cannot capture. So then it might be the case that in order to talk about radial movement of the particles from here to here, you actually need to consider like implementing some quantum operation on this thermal bus-like hidden regions. And then that might be actually related to this picture, because this preparation time is actually just happening here. So it may be the case that if I want to talk about its quantum theory on end of the wild brain and asymptotic boundary, then I might be forced to think about the quantum theory with bus, in a sense like unzero degrees of freedom, and we need to be very careful about how the apparent non-locality is emerging and so on. Okay. Anyway, let me summarize my talk. So we have studied the causal potential causal problems of this end of the world brain setup. And then we pointed out that the subadditivity violation happens and the entanglement is not there for the scattering, so that's the problem. These two puzzles seem to force me to think that there is some kind of superluminal light cone growing. Whether it is apparent or real, it should be there. And then considering the induced light cone seems to resolve these two puzzles very beautifully. That's good. But do we really want to believe that this theory on Q and A is non-local or not? That is a very difficult question. And at this point, I'm tempted to believe that it's just an apparent phenomenon. But more like beyond the conceptual questions, one potential way to go is I'm believing that the version of the famous connected wedge theorem, which means that if the holographic scattering happens, the entanglement wedges are connected. That's a very beautiful theorem. It's purely GL proof, right? And then that kind of a proof or theorem can be maybe generalized for the general setup of the holography with radial cutoff. And that will be very important in order to talk about entanglement in the holography with generalized radial cutoff. Okay. Anyway, so that's it for me. Yeah, thank you.
About 3 minutes. Any questions?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So this is very interesting, and I think it raises this question of the whole idea of locality in quantum mechanics. That you would think that you have a setup which is local, but then because this is dual to some ball fixture, which has entanglements through the degree of Takanagi formula, there are some entanglements that need to be set into your estate.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone who lives in the boundary and doesn't know about the ball, they they would just experience that there must be some entanglements that other. They exist in their initial conditions, and they don't really have any explanation for it. They say, okay, we observe these entanglements, they must be, they are there, we don't know why they're there, but is that the version of non-locality, would you say?
Version of non-locality. No, I mean, the non-locality, what I mean is that, It's just literally like, can I send a signal faster than the speed of light by signal information? That's all, yeah.
Yeah, I understand, but I mean this separation of signaling and entanglements
mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering, is it a little bit artificial? Like we said, you're using entanglement as a resource.
Yeah, it's more like if we believe that ADS-CFT correspondence has an ability to holographically realize any event on the ball, like two particles interact with each other. And then we are forced to think that in the language of the boundary, somehow this Liu Takanagi-like geometric entanglement has been utilized.
Mm-hmm.
And then that without that that kind of entanglement, we cannot.
Right, but that kind of suggests that observers who live on the bulk and are arbitrarily separated, they cannot arbitrarily choose their vacuum. Isn't that true?
So it's just more like the fact that these particles can scatter and then scatter implies that in the bulk geometry is there. It's smooth and nice, well defined geometry with a nice sub ADS locality and so on. So, from the boundary picture, we don't know anything, but by doing this scattering experiment, we know for sure that the geometry is nice and smooth and there at the center in the scattering region. That is something we can study. So for this reason, I think this is a nice way to study like sub-ADS structure of the ADS-CFT and so on, yeah, for instance.
How strong is the argument that, or the reason for believing that the theory on the end of the world brain is local? I mean, wouldn't a simple explanation just be that in this kind of a setup,
doesn't make sense.
The world brain theory is just a non-local theory.
It might be the case, and I'm not equipped enough to deny that statement. But like, if I create such a situation with actual brain and the boundary and then in laboratory or whatever, in actual space or whatever, then if such a light cone can be created, then I will ask you to go there, and I will come here, and then I ask you to send the superluminal signaling, and I can observe. And then I don't want to see the situation where in an actual universe, even a negatively curved with end of the world brain, super signaling is possible.
Let me just comment that
I'm
aware of the fact that if you move the boundary of ADS
mm-hmm.
a little bit in from infinity, so
mm-hmm.
a little bit,
mm-hmm.
make a finite boundary,
mm-hmm.
then you get a theory that's dual to the interior bulk, but that
mm-hmm.
theory
mm-hmm.
has non-locality in it. It's not a local field theory.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you pull the boundary away from infinity
right.
to a finite location.
Mm-hmm.
So my reaction to what you're saying is just like, oh, well, this is like that. You have a
boundary
deep in the bulk. Of course it's
So that might be true, but I think the real question is, can we really use that non-local coupling and so on to send a signal superluminary?
Right.
And I personally don't want that to happen in reality. It should be apparent. That is my, So by doing like this, moving the boundary to the bulk, of course we naively have non-locality for various reasons. This kind of non-locality was kind of pointed out also in T.T. Bar paper as well. And so that seems like we are forced to think, but yeah, if it's non-local, then it's not so useful to talk about various complicated and subtle puzzles on the actual quantum gravity happening on the bulk. So I really want to ask if it is possible to formulate everything locally. Otherwise, like, we can somehow start saying, oh, okay, it's somehow this non-local coupling is doing something wrong. I don't want to have such a situation. So I want to have a precise rule about what is allowed and what is not allowed. And so, yeah.
Okay, great. We should wrap up. Let's start at, let's say, 5:05. That's a 25-minute break.
Thank you very much.